This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, hey, what do you say? Today is the day for Madrid away. A familiar foe, we've been here before. Another Bernabeu stalemate, or will they again ship four? Haaland is a robot and Grealish is a looker. It's Tuesday, April 8th, and I'm Adam Booker.
I'm a very impressed Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Alex Michelle.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's good to win! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. They say Tupac is dead, but here I am sitting in this chair right now. Welcome back to the Tuesday edition. Of course, we are looking ahead to tonight's Champions League quarterfinal first leg clash with Real Madrid. Ollie, welcome back. Saw you on the Sportsman this morning, repping the old City Report pod. How was that?
City Report pod for life. It was good. Unfortunately, I wasn't as rhythmical as you were just then. I'm very impressed with that, Adam. Where did you say you thought of that?
In the shower.
In the shower. Love it.
I am very much good. Somebody who spends, well, I don't pay my own water bill. It's just included in my rent where I live. If I paid my own water bill, I'd be much more frugal about it. But I am somebody who straight chills in the shower. I hang out.
I'm questioning your green credentials now, Adam.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible for the environment. Horrible for the environment. But we all have our vices.
It's amazing for the listeners. But it's amazing for the listeners.
Yeah, because I can think of sick poems. Alex, welcome back.
Thank you, great to be here. I think we can just end the show after that, don't you think?
Yeah, the only issue with that is I've now set myself up and set the listeners up for essentially infinite failure because I won't ever be able to replicate that again. Maybe Champions League round of 16, quarterfinal, semifinal, final intros. I will continue to do poems. We will get into the football, though. Obviously, we'll talk about City's trip to Madrid in just a few minutes. But I want to start in the Premier League, Ollie, because when we recorded the Palace review at the weekend, Amos and Ollie McCool put that out yesterday. If you are looking for reaction from the win at Selhurst Park after this episode, go and check out yesterday's episode. But when they recorded that, Liverpool had yet to play at Old Trafford. They have since played, dropped points, kind of a win-win situation for everybody there with United and Liverpool playing in a title clash, essentially. Have your thoughts on the title race changed after that? Obviously, it somewhat eliminates the goal difference complications for now. There'd have to be some screwy math for goal difference to come back into play. I think a lot of us were sitting here in the last few weeks, given how Liverpool had been playing, given how Arsenal had been playing, feeling a little bit insecure about winning a fourth straight. Has that changed at all, given that Liverpool have dropped a few points?
Yeah, for a couple of the reasons. One, I think it's showing that the pressure of having Manchester City chasing you is starting to show. That is a horrible position to be in, horrible situation to be in. I for my sins, was having a look into the depth of Arsenal Twitter and Liverpool Twitter. I had to shower after I was done, but the overriding take seems to be that neither of those teams are confident, or neither of those fan bases anyway, are confident of winning out. And they are extremely concerned that City are going to win out. Now, I don't think any team will win out because, quite frankly, I don't think Arsenal or Liverpool have the quality to go 7 out of 7 from here. I don't think City have the consistency to go 7 out of 7 from here. But now it is so, so tight. I wouldn't be surprised to see Liverpool drop off. I think if you are going to go to Old Trafford and play against this version of Manchester United at the back end of a title race and not pick up 3 points, you are not worthy title winners. And I mean this with absolute disrespect to Manchester United. But at this point in a title race, you have to go and win at Old Trafford, right? This isn't like Spurs away that City have got. I think Arsenal's still got to play Spurs. This isn't like going to... this isn't like the game at the Etihad between City and Arsenal. This is one of those fixtures where you have to go and win if you are going to go on and be champions. I may come back to regret this. I may come back to a torrent of abuse in May, but I think Liverpool are starting to crack. I've not thought all season that they've necessarily been value for a title winner. In the same way that Arsenal weren't last season, right? Arsenal were up there till very late, but everyone kind of had that feeling that they weren't as good as their results suggested they were. And eventually it showed. I think Liverpool are coming into the stage of last season's Arsenal. It's going to take a hell of an effort for them to see this down to the wire and or win it. My bigger concern still is Arsenal. Arsenal look good. They are worth their results. They do deserve, certainly deserve to be where they are. They've got a far superior goal difference to us. They've conceded less. They've scored more. They've been wonderfully consistent. So have my opinions changed? Do I think City are going to win it? I don't know. I would actually lean towards no. I think we're more likely to pick up the FA Cup and the Champions League than we are the Premier League. But I'm certainly in a better place than I was the other day because I now think we are down to, or will be down to, two contenders rather than three. Removing that extra variable in Liverpool will be nice. I don't want to jump the gun and say they are going to drop off, but I think these are the early signs that over the next 3, 4, 5 games that they're just going to slip one too many times, so to speak.
I did say on one of the episodes last week that it's going to be the shite teams that you don't expect to drop points to, that one of these teams is going to drop points to, and that's exactly what Manchester United is. So, Alex, have your thoughts changed at all with that result? And do you think that that result is a boost to City in any way? Do you think that this will change their outlook on things now that they can see potential cracks and you know, maybe smell some blood in the water?
I think it's not just that result, but it's also the way that City themselves have you know, carried themselves over the course of the last two games. I think that plays into it massively, and I want to get into that in a second. But for me personally, I mean, I'm sure I've had my mixed reactions over the course of the past few months on here, and I can't really remember saying anything in particular regarding the title race because I probably have said, you know, some things that were quite optimistic and some things that were quite pessimistic. But I do think this just goes again to say that, you know, it really, you can look at the supercomputers, you can look at the projections, you can look at the graphics of here are the remaining fixtures. And I think you made this point last week, Adam, like you just said, you can't just go and tick off, oh, that's 3 points, that's a loss, that's a draw. It's the Premier League. Anything can happen. And yes, these three teams are quite head and shoulders above the rest, but it's not like each of these teams is incredibly dominant. You know, we each have our flaws, and it is going to go down to the wire, and it's going to come down to most likely who can manage themselves week in, week out the best. And City are by far the best prepared to do that. And to bring it back to the initial point I made, which is if you look at the last two results from City, and I think this is pretty much picture-perfect planning from Pep and picture-perfect execution from the squad. You get a rotated side both games. You get early subs in both games. If I'm not mistaken, I think Rodri was taken out early in both of the two games. You get Phil Foden scoring a hat-trick and Kevin De Bruyne putting on a masterclass in the other game, getting your two probably most important players, maybe Erling Haaland's in there, in terms of getting them into form ahead of these Champions League games. It is pretty much everything that you want to see from a City perspective. And yeah, exactly like you said, these teams, in terms of Arsenal and Liverpool, they're going to drop points. It would be pretty surprising to me as well if either of them went perfect the rest of the way. And it really just comes down to City focusing on themselves, taking it one game at a time. I know it kind of sounds cliche after we watch the Netflix documentary and that's all we hear about, but it really is how you have to be successful. And City just know how to do that better than either the two clubs at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll click back into Premier League gear later on this week after the Real Madrid game. And as we start to look ahead, I guess, you know, we're going to have to switch into FA Cup mode as well at some point too. So it's that time of year again. The fixtures are big and they're coming thick and fast. So, but we will turn our attention to the Champions League. That's the matter at hand. And Ollie, we're going to have to start with injuries, unfortunately, because City have low key been in a bit of an injury crisis in the last few weeks. And obviously we had John Stones and Kyle Walker both dropping out of England duty, picking up injuries and friendlies. You know, we've done the discourse on those friendlies, so we won't get into that now. But we know that Kyle Walker and Nathan Ake both won't travel to Madrid. John Stones, of course, played against Palace. Well, I would say played. I think he played. He was a shell of himself, but he played. And Yasko Gvardiol, of course, got injured against Aston Villa, I believe, and he is a doubt, according to Pep from his presser Monday morning. So there's some real question marks going into this. Is this enough to derail City, or should the combination of Rico Lewis, Manuel Akanji, Ruben Diaz, and John Stones be enough to deal with the Real Madrid threat?
I think we have enough on the whole to deal with the Madrid threat. But in terms of it's the Vinicius Jr. threat that bothers me, especially if Kyle Walker's out. Even Walker's detractors, reference here, Ollie McCall, one of our very own, Walker's biggest detractors will still say, we still need him in these kind of games when we have exceptionally dangerous wingers. There is nobody better still, at least in the Premier League, possibly still in European football, at dealing with these types of players. So I have all the faith in the world in Rico. Rico is a phenomenal talent. He's not shied away from any single challenge yet. He has played in a few big games. He scored goals. He's solid on the ball. He's a fantastic player and a fantastic prospect, but Vinicius Jr. is a different kettle of fish. There isn't a player in the Premier League like him. That's my concern. If we can get through Madrid, look, if you said offered me a 1-0 loss now, I'd take it. I'll take it, because I think at the Etihad, we can do anything. Even if we went into the Etihad game 3-0 down, I think we can still pull through. So if we can just control the score, control the counter-attacking threat from Madrid, and especially Vinicius, we'll be absolutely fine. They have got other stars like Bellingham. I don't think midfield is going to be a problem for us. Bellingham's fantastic, don't get me wrong, but we've got Rodri, we've got Kovacic, we've got Bernardo Silva. We have players that can deal with them in midfield. We have an attacking force that can deal with whatever they throw at us at the back and whatever shithousing they bring to the table. Not a problem. I think what everyone's going to be concerned about going into this is can we keep the score down from a Madrid perspective and give ourselves a good chance with a fairly close scoreline coming back to the Etihad? Because once the Etihad's on fire, once those stands are on fire, as it is in these Champions League second legs, yeah, I'd back us. So we've just got to keep it reasonable. As far as the defence goes, I mean, we've got to be worried about Stones, right? If Stones isn't fully fit, I think we're down to three defenders. Rico, Akanji, and Diaz.
Yeah.
The biggest worry is if we can't get four defenders out on the pitch, never mind which four are they. So we're going to have to see what happens, but
that's an interesting one.
Left back again.
That's an interesting one, because there is some precedent for this in a number of ways. We've seen Rodri play at center back before. I'm not suggesting that would happen at the Bernabeu. We have seen Fernandinho play at right back against Real Madrid in the first leg of the 21-22 season. That was a disaster. Yep. I think Real Madrid scored three. Vinicius maybe had two of them. Mm-hmm. So there is precedent, Alex. Now, I think the interesting thing about this is how much does this do these injuries? And I do want to point out that Real Madrid have injuries as well. It sounds like Tchouaméni is going to be starting at the back. So that's not a natural center back playing alongside Antonio Rudiger, because they obviously have Eder Militao out. They have David Alaba out. So they have defensive injuries of their own. And I think what's really interesting is we heard from Pep in his press conference this morning, and he said, and I quote, "We cannot come here just to control the game. We have to hurt Real Madrid to punish them and to try to score goals," end quote. Now, I think that's interesting because it seems like in the past few seasons, Pep's ideas have been to control these away legs, keep the score down, keep it at arm's length, and then you can take it back to the Etihad and you can run riot on a team. Do you think the dynamic of this game, because of the defensive injuries, because you maybe have Vinicius Jr. running at Rico Lewis, or you have Erling Haaland, you know, hanging off the back shoulder of a natural midfielder in Tchouaméni, could we be in for a bit of a basketball match here?
Potentially. I think that quote from Pep could be a bit of mind games, a bit of uncertainty in the air, just looming so that, you know, Ancelotti has to plan for 10 plans instead of 5, something along those lines. But yeah, I think there's something to it. I mean, I don't think we're going to see anything as crazy as Rodri at center back or anything, you know, outside of the Akanji, Stones, Ruben, Rico Lewis back four. I think the only real question for me is, does Pep potentially start Rico Lewis off the left and deal with Rodrigo over there rather than put him one-on-one against Vinny? Potentially. I'm not too sure, but I don't think that changes all too much. But yeah, I do think that there's some merit to that idea in that, you know, we're not going to come to the Bernabeu and just sit back. Even last season when the game finished 1-1, we didn't do that. It was a bit back and forth. You know, Ruben Diaz had that, you know, sliding challenge that crossed the goal that saved another goal. Like, there were chances on both ends, and it was the two screamers eventually that, you know, define that game. But I do think, and we've seen it recently from City, like, we haven't been that defensively solid, and I'm not sure the game plan is as set in stone last season in terms of, okay, go away and just leave there with a draw and then come back to the Etihad and destroy whatever opposition we face then. I don't think it's as set in stone. I think it's similar, but I think it's slightly muted. And another thing to add on top of that is that we need to be on the front foot because four of their players and some of their most important players are on two yellow cards and a yellow card away from suspension. The four names there are Jude Bellingham, Tchouaméni, Vinny, and Camavinga. Those are the four guys. And I think maybe Camavinga is probably the least impactful of them. And even saying that is crazy because he is quite the player. So I think, you know, you will need to sort of agitate them in whatever sense you can. And part of that is playing attacking football and, you know, really taking it to them when you have the opportunity to do so, because sort of from all perspectives in terms of the firepower that they bring, the lineup that City have, the sort of muted home performance from City this season, the lack of explosion, it just makes sense to play a bit more that way, but not go full on sort of basketball match. Don't play into it too much, but somewhere in that middle zone.
Yeah, Ali, this is a bit of a weird one for me because going into this round of the Champions League last year, obviously we had Bayern Munich, and that was at a time in which City were fully in their stride of playing that back three with John Stones stepping into midfield and Erling Haaland was clicking and De Bruyne was at his best and Grealish was at his best. And you knew, you know, we've thrown this phrase identity around a ton in the last few weeks, and you knew exactly how City were going to play. You knew how they were going to play at the Bernabeu. You knew what they were going to do when they got it back to the Etihad. It feels a bit more up in the air this time. I think there's every chance in the world. I hope this doesn't happen. I think there's every chance in the world we see Jeremy Doku and Pep tries to go at it and win the game in Madrid.
No.
There's also every chance in the world.
No.
There's also every – I'm just going based off of the fact that he's played in all but I think two of the games against the Big Six this season. There's also every chance in the world we go and play with Kovacic and Grealish and Bernardo and Foden and we stink the place out and we bring it back to the Etihad. Point being, we don't exactly know City's true identity and their true kind of style from this season. There isn't really a precedent at the moment.
I think a lot of that is because of the Grealish injuries, though. I feel like Grealish is, whilst he's not the first name on the team sheet, he's not probably the second or third. When Grealish is fit, we sort of build the attacking dynamic around him, or certainly when he's playing or when he's not. There's also the Foden factor, the De Bruyne factor, as to how we set up and how we play. Are we going to talk about lineups in this? What we want to see in the second?
Yeah,
half?
we can together pick an 11.
Fine, but yes, you are right. You are absolutely right. We don't have a defined identity this season, but I do think that's because we all say, right, Doku has played, probably been playing more than we ever intended him to, at least this season in his first season. That is because we've not had Grealish readily available all the time. De Bruyne has been in and out of form. Even Haaland's been in and out of form. And obviously Alvarez got the start last week. So, yeah, how we set up is... I don't think... We will talk about it in the second half, I know. I don't think there's that much of a question mark for this one because we have a fit Jack Grealish. We have a fit Kevin De Bruyne off the back of a brace. We have a fit Phil Foden. We have a fit Erling Haaland. I think that attacking four kind of writes itself this time. And I suspect that's what Ancelotti will be planning for. But it is a problem that we haven't consistently had that approach because we have such a drastic difference between when Doku is out on the left and when Grealish is out on the left. So, yeah, we don't necessarily have the rhythm and the cadence that we did last season with that set system. But I do think it's pretty... I hope it's fairly obvious how we approach this because if we're sat here talking about counter-attacks being the biggest risk and then we're going to play with Doku, who is liable to giving up the ball in fairly dangerous positions, then God help us.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on with Ollie, but I'll leave it for the second half when we really get into lineup. But to bring it back to something in terms of the two last performances that we've seen, I want to just pull out something that, I don't know, has been stuck in my head and has been a focal point of discussion for, you know, the past month or so, which is, you know, the difference between Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden as the sort of focal point. And I think that goes hand in hand with the lack of identity, again, to bring it back to that theme, like we do every episode, it seems. But if, you know, you look at the Villa performance and... Ahead of that, on the preview show for that, I said that I wanted to see something compelling from City. I wanted to see us, you know, scrape by, not scrape by with just a 1-0. I wanted to see us, you know, actually put in a class performance, dominate the game. That's exactly what we did. And Phil Foden was at the center of that. And it felt like one of the first moments in a while where I personally have confidence in this side and what we can do and the level that we can get back to. And then the second game, of course, Phil Foden is rested and Kevin De Bruyne comes in and Kevin De Bruyne is now all of a sudden the main man again. It's like the king is back. He's here. And you look at those two existing independently. And this is something that a lot of us have raised is the worry that you can't get the best of both of them when they play together. And I think that, again, goes into the quote that you were pulling out from Pep about we can't just sit back and potentially we do see something where that we haven't seen before where these two are playing through the middle in some fashion or another. Again, I think that probably means Phil Foden coming off the wing like he did against Arsenal, but there will certainly be a lot more space in the center of the park in this game than there was against Arsenal, where against Arsenal, the transition to get them into the middle pretty much took both of them out of the game and it ended up being a really, really negative sort of decision. But in this one, I think that's exactly the way that you break Real Madrid down. And I'm just sitting back and, you know, sort of really excited to see how that dynamic plays out between them. And individually speaking, you want your players, again, we talk about form a lot, like it's just a buzzword that gets thrown around, especially ahead of these matches. You want your best players coming into this game with their best form. We know Erling Haaland has had his struggles throughout the season, but Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden in particular, individually speaking, they are coming into this with their confidence at probably the highest it's been all season. Maybe for Phil Foden, maybe since that Brentford game, but they're really coming into this game on a high note. And I think that bodes really well for a performance here.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll get a bit more into that starting 11, who we think will start. And is it Doku? Is it Grealish? Is it Kovacic? Is it Bernardo? Is it Rico at left back? And is it Ederson or Ortega? That's another discussion we have to have. So listeners, stay right where you are. We'll be back in a quick moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. Ollie, I just want to start real quick before we get into picking a lineup. I want to talk about Real Madrid's mentality a bit, because obviously I think they're a bit shell-shocked after last season's result at the Etihad, and we saw all the words in Marca and Sport AS and all of these papers saying, oh, they came into an atmosphere they weren't expecting and all that kind of stuff. And I think in a way they got a bit of a taste of their own medicine, you know, coming to this big arena and the fans are on top of you and you just kind of get overrun and the moment swallows you. Coming into this, do you think that they will think they have to go for it in the first leg and they have to go out of their way to pick up a few extra goals and really go at City and potentially leave themselves exposed, knowing that there's every chance in the world that they could go to the Etihad and ship 4 or 5?
Oh, they fucking fear us now. They fear us now. The exact words I think you're referring to, they called it a complete trap. They said the Etihad was a complete trap. That is unbelievable. I could soak that in and read that 10 times over, because that is crazy, right? Real Madrid, the club, the arguably the biggest club in the world, certainly with the biggest Champions League pedigree going, you know, La Decima, the glory, the Los Blancos in the Champions League, and they've come to the Etihad and they've walked into a trap. And what we did to them in that first half, oh my God. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, hopefully everyone has seen, I wouldn't even know where to find them now, but when the draw was made, there were viral clips going around on Twitter, montages of Real Madrid fans, streamers, reacting to the draw. And listen, streamers are streamers, right? Bit of clickbait, they're always going to take it over the top, but they were upset, they were pissed. We have that aura. And the fact that we're at the Etihad again, second leg, they will not like that. They will not like that at all. They're going to have to go for it. Of course they're going to have to. They will feel like that because they know what's waiting for them in that second leg at the Etihad. Like I said, even if we do go into the second leg 3-0 down, we have faith. We can have faith that we can turn it around. And negative emotions are always stronger than positive emotions. So however good we would feel going into a second leg at 3-0 down, they're still thinking, they're really thinking, we've still got to be extremely careful here. So yeah, first leg, if you're Real Madrid, you cannot afford to come back to the Etihad level or even with a one-goal advantage. They have to go for it because they're going to walk into a trap again when they come back.
Does that give City a bit of a psychological advantage, Alex, coming into this? Or can you on the flip side, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, can you on the flip side say, well, it's Real Madrid, you know, we kind of dogged them in one game, but they've had their moments against us and they've had their moments, you know, on an annual basis in this competition as well.
I do think it is a benefit for a City, because I completely agree with what Ollie just said there. They do have to really go for it in some fashion or another. I went on a Real Madrid podcast last week to preview this as well. And Sid, the guy who I was talking with on that, was not necessarily calling for them to really go for it. He more wanted them to keep it very tight and try to come to the Etihad and keep it tight and maybe go to penalties or something. It seemed like penalties was floating in their mind already, which is crazy ahead of a first leg.
We turn them into their Cross City rivals, exactly. Don't we?
And I think you look at Rodri, for example, and his unbeaten streak. It's just, as poor as we have talked about City at some points in recent times, you look at City's recent form, you look at that undefeated record from Rodri, and it's just like, how the hell are you going to beat this side? I wouldn't really know. And I want to add one little anecdote from last season as well, which I wasn't aware of until about 2 months ago. We've turned them into conspiracy theorists. There are groups of Real Madrid fans who think that when they came to play us at the Etihad, we drugged the air in the opposition locker room with Buspirona, which is an anxiety medicine. God. Yeah, exactly. And so they're already concocting these wild stories about, you know, their players being sluggish at the Etihad and their players in some way being drugged. And it just really shows that I've mentioned this a few times this season with Arsenal specifically, but the mentality of fans really does seep into the club and the performances of the players. And I think this is another one where, you know, their mentality is changing and that might be reflected in the performance.
I think we've been drugging the air against United for years now at this point, Ollie.
I don't know what the hell they do all week. Yeah. Do you know what? I think with this, a massive part of it is the order of the draw. I think...
Well, they fought to get it switched when the draw first came out because I think they were trying to say that Atleti was going to play the same night potentially and they couldn't have two Madrid teams playing at the same time, something like that. But they did fight to get the draw reversed and have them play at the Bernabeu in the second
leg. I don't blame them. I think we've got PTSD of what happened at the Bernabeu a couple of seasons ago. They're going to have PTSD about what happened at the Etihad last season. Neither club, if this was switched and we were going to Madrid in the second leg, I think we'd be shitting ourselves. I genuinely think this is one of those rare occasions where you're not mad for saying the order that those balls came out may well have determined the winner of the tie. Very early to say this, there's 180 minutes plus of football to be played. But looking at what has happened in the last two seasons at the Bernabeu and the Etihad respectively, you would not be mad for saying City being at home second leg has sealed Madrid's fate or vice versa. There is now an aura and an air of fear for both clubs at each other's grounds. So for that second leg to be back at home is priceless. It's genuinely priceless.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully there's another far more sinister version of Lasagna Gate on the cards in the coming weeks. Alex, let's talk about the lineup because there's a couple of big questions I think we have to answer. And first is actually in between the sticks. And obviously, Ederson is back in training, and it sounds like he's fit to play. But Guardiola was asked about this a couple of days ago, and he said, Ederson or Ortega versus Real Madrid. I have to think, because Ederson is coming back from being injured and feels good, but he has a lack of rhythm. And we're really pleased from Stefan. He's an exceptional keeper. So it does sound like it's a bit up in the air. Now, I took a little bit of stick online when I claimed that if both keepers are fit, it's an absolute no-brainer who starts. I'm not going to reveal who I think should be starting. I'll leave that up to you guys. But what is your take on the keeper situation?
I think I agree with you. It's Ederson if he's fit. And I don't really like any City fan that suggests otherwise. I do think that, you know, there is something to be said about Ederson not having rhythm. I don't know how much rhythm a goalkeeper needs necessarily, but mentally speaking,
he's dealt his whole career with having to drop in and out of rhythm. I mean, he goes like 70 minutes at a time without seeing the ball or touching the ball, and then he'll just click into gear and do a Cruyff turn on his goal line. So surely it shouldn't be that big of an issue for him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I do think that's also his downfall sometimes, is that the opposition has that one chance and he's not really switched on. But yeah, I don't know how much that matters, but it certainly does play a part. And if you feel, I think it's sort of a feeling thing where if Pep Pep speaks about this often, where he sort of like looks at players and he knows if they're tired or he knows if they're not ready. He can sort of soul read people at this point with how long he's been in the game and how brilliant he is. And so I think, yeah, if he reads between those players that Ortega is the right decision, I would trust in Pep to make that decision. I think the only this comes up every time you talk about a comparison between them, but Ederson has better distribution. Ortega has slightly better shot stopping. And it really then comes down to, if you're looking at those factors, does Pep want to play long in this game? Is playing into Haaland's feet, backing him up against Rudiger and whoever they have at center back alongside him, is that part of the game plan? And in that case, you're really pushing for Ederson to start. Or if not, if City are going to try to play out from the back, draw Real forward, and then exploit them that way, create space, then, okay, Ortega wouldn't be that big of a difference. So, and maybe his shot stopping then comes into play there. So there is an argument to be made either way, and I do think that the decision can go either way depending on how Pep reads the situation. But at the end of the day, if you are just given the sort of decision straight up between the two of them and they are both fully fit, it has to be Ederson.
Yeah, Ali, I've been kind of joking in the past few weeks that, you know, maybe we'll see some Arsenal-style keeper rotation, even though that actually hasn't been a thing, and Aaron Ramsdale hasn't left the bench for about 8 months. But it's Ederson, right? It's actually crazy to me that we're having this conversation. Stefan Ortega has been immense since coming in, and I think he's probably one of, if not the best number two I've ever seen in the Premier League. He's unreal. The fact that he can step right in seamlessly, can play cup finals against United and fit right in, fantastic. However, we are almost a decade into Ederson being the number one at this club. If you still can't figure out what value he brings and how important he is, what's in there? Is there wood inside of that head?
I agree with all of the above, really. Not too much else to say on that. What I will say is that it's no disaster if it's Ortega, right? It's not a case of in the old days where it was Joe Hart or Kevin Sterlegaard. That kind of rotation, right?
Don't you knock 7'8" Kostel-Pentilemon.
Young Kostel-Pentilemon, great keeper. What a shout. Arnie Harrison as well, remember him?
Yeah.
We've had some cracking number twos and number threes in the past, haven't we? It's not Scott Carson, right? No, you're right. Look, Eddie is Eddie. He's the best in the world at what he does. Yes, he's prone to an error or two every season. That is just, you're dancing with the devil with Ederson. That's natural. Ortega is probably a little bit less accident prone, but that's because he's not as brave or as good at Ederson at doing what Ederson does. If Ederson could cut out those ridiculous body checks and two-footers that he likes to do when the ball's 25 yards out of his own net, that'd be nice. But like you said, it's Ederson. If Ederson is fit, he should play. However, if he's not quite fit and Ortega has to play, I am not going to cry about it. We are incredibly blessed to have two fantastic keepers, but there is a clear number one, and we should not, as a fan base or individuals, be campaigning for Ortega to start over a fit Ederson. So, yeah, I'm with you, mate.
All right, I want to do a little game here. We're going to pick a starting 11. I am just going to throw names out. I'm gonna give it a 4-1-4-1. Obviously, it's not going to set up like that. We probably have a defender stepping into midfield, so it'll be a loose 4-1-4-1, 3-2-4-1, whatever you want to call it. So we'll go with Ederson in net. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Rico Lewis at right back.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Center back partnership of Ruben Diaz and Manuel Akanji.
Are we assuming that John Stones is fit?
I'm sorry. John Stones is fit. So a centre-back partnership probably of John Stones and Ruben Diaz.
Yep. Yep.
And Manuel Akanji on the left.
I'm going to throw a curveball out there. It wouldn't surprise me to see Rico on the left.
Alex said this earlier, and I hadn't thought of it. But that it does make sense if you want to slide Akanji over to deal with the Vinicius Jr. threat.
Yeah, and not only for the Vinicius Jr. threat on the right, but just purely the fact that with a lack of left-footed defender available, Rico is probably the most versatile that we've got and the most capable of doing that old inverted Chancelo role to slip in next to Rodri. So it's either that, or we have Bernardo at left-back slipping into that midfield role. But either way, I think we're probably going to be seeing an inverted left back.
Okay, we'll go with that. The four fit defenders are the four starting for now. Rodri, of course, is in midfield. Now this is where I think it gets a little bit more questionable. We've seen Kovacic. He's been great. He comes in, he adds a bit more control. But if Jack Grealish is fit, does that mean you can leave Kovacic out and you can play with Bernardo, Foden, De Bruyne, and Grealish and Haaland, and you get a bit more of that dynamic thrust? Alex, I'll let you go first. Between Kovacic and another more attack-minded player, what are you going with?
I think Bernardo starts over Kovacic in midfield here. And this is the bone I was going to pick with Ollie earlier, because you said something along the lines of, oh, I hope Kovacic starts. And then you started listing off the names a little bit later, and you said Bernardo, Grealish. And for me, one of those three is going to be benched here. Unless, like you said, the Bernardo left-back experiment thing that we've only seen.
Yeah, this is my train of thought here. Yeah,
I don't think that happens, though. I hope to God this doesn't. I mean, we saw it at Arsenal. It was kind of a disaster. I mean, he put up a good fight, but it was kind of a disaster at Arsenal last season.
Yeah, it's not that crazy. It's not like I could see that happening, and I wouldn't be too. Ollie, I'll let you go on about that, because I think that you've probably thought through that a bit, and that was
once you say it, I think it makes sense in everybody's heads. It's possible. It's possible that we have Bernardo at left back slipping into midfield next to Rodri and Kovacic. It gives us an extra body at the back to deal with the counter-attacking threat. It gives us a left footer in the defence. And when we're moving up the pitch, it gives us an extra body in the midfield, again, in case the ball comes back the other way. In my head, it makes sense. Fuck knows what goes on in Pep's head when he's preparing these things, when he's got these injury challenges in front of him. But I wouldn't be overly surprised if we do see Bernardo, Rodri, Kovacic, Bernardo left-back, Rodri and Kovacic in the midfield. Otherwise, if we're going with Rico as the left-back, or Akanji as the left-back, then, yeah, I would be inclined to say Rodri and Bernardo instead of Kovacic.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. And I would say that, along with that, another sort of tick in the boxes for that potential Bernardo left-back thing is we saw Kovacic step into like that left center-back position against Arsenal. We've seen that. Like, he can cover there, and then Bernardo gets to roam around when we are in possession. It really could work. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Yeah.
It gives me a little bit of fear seeing something we haven't seen much of or any of this season at the Bernabeu, which is why I think I'd rather see just the four fit defenders, the natural defenders at least, playing in that back four. And then going forward, you can keep that control with Grealish. So we'll say Grealish is a must start.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to just add something in here really quick, because not anything against Grealish, but I put out a little poll on Twitter earlier today saying, okay, let's assume there are 10 names locked in, the defense that we said with Rico in there, Kovacic, Benz, Bernardo in there, who gets the final spot? And it was between Alvarez, Doku, Grealish, and Kovacic. And I think if I had asked that a week ago, the general consensus would have been incredibly split. It might have been sort of like 50-50 between Grealish and Kovacic for that top spot, and then Alvarez and Doku taking on a good percentage themselves. But it was almost 75% Grealish was the sort of reaction. And so, yeah, I think the general sentiment, which it changes quickly, people have short short memories and short attention spans, but Grealish puts in a performance like he did against Palace, and all of a sudden we're back to his best, and he's a no-brainer. He's one of the first names on the team sheet for some people. It's just really funny how that all works out.
Yeah, and look, Grealish is at least the Manchester City version of Grealish is made for these games, especially when you're listing off some of these big players that are on yellows that could miss a second leg. Give me Grealish. Get, you know, let him get stuck in a bit, maybe pull somebody's hair or like stick his finger in their hair or something. Get somebody sent off for the second leg. That's exactly why I want Grealish on the pitch. Haaland up front, I think, is a given. De Bruyne behind him and Foden out on the right. Picks itself. I think.
Tick, tick, tick. Yeah,
so we'll go from back to front. Ederson, Lewis, Stones, Diaz, Akanji, Rodri, Grealish, Bernardo, De Bruyne, Foden, Haaland. Everybody happy with that? Potentially Bernardo at left back and Kovacic, but...
Yeah. The only potential change is Bernardo at right wing to offer the help with Vinicius at right back because he is the hardest worker coming back.
Which we saw, I believe, against Bayern Munich in the first leg of the quarterfinal last season to deal with the pace of Coman and Sané.
Yeah, strong engine, strong pace, loves getting stuck in at the back and helping out defensively. It's possible we see Bernardo at right wing, in which case the question comes to who's the fall guy in the middle? Is it De Bruyne or is it Foden?
Can they play together?
That's not going to happen.
Who drops out?
Don't kid yourself. No, yeah, I think Grealish would be dropped in that point and Foden would play off the left.
No, what I'm saying, right, let me think about this. The four fit defenders, Rodri, Bernardo on the right, in front of Rodri and centrally is De Bruyne and Foden.
It's not happening.
Not away. Not at the Bernabeu. No. We're going to have that extra body in midfield. So we say Rodri and Kovacic in midfield, and then we're looking at Grealish on the left.
We've got our wires crossed here because what I listed earlier didn't have Kovacic in it. It had four.
No, he was just throwing out
attack.
No. But if Bernardo's going on the right, it's going to be Rodri and Kovacic in the middle, and Grealish on the left, Haaland up front. Then the question is, who plays behind Haaland?
I think there's
the exact reason. I don't think.
I think there's almost zero chance both or either of De Bruyne or Foden don't play this game. De Bruyne because of just the heritage essentially in the competition for him now of these big moments, and Foden because he's been the best player in the country this season.
But these are the questions that Pep sat right now. Pep will be sat there in front of a tactics board looking at exactly this, and it will absolutely cross his mind. Should I put 100%. Bernardo out on the right to support defensively with Vinicius? If he's coming to a conclusion of yes, he's looking at the same thing we are. Who drops? It has to be Foden or De Bruyne, and Pep will
make
already these calls.
We've already roofied our opponent. Can we play with 12 men?
Pep will make these calls. Pep will not look at De Bruyne and say, oh, he's got pedigree. He won't look at Foden and say he's been in fantastic form. He will look at this tactically. If he wants to put Bernardo out on the right, I believe that one of Foden or De Bruyne is coming out. The question is, who?
I think there are two things that go against that. One of them is, like I've sort of been responding to, I think Grealish just would drop out in that case if Pep really is set on Bernardo playing off the right and then you just put Phil off the left. I agree with Adam. I don't think I would be shocked if either of Phil or Kevin were benched tomorrow or benched today. I just think that, yeah, exactly as you said, this is what Pep does. He goes through all the permutations and this is how I do it as well when I break down my lineup. You think about those priorities and you sort of go top to bottom. What could the big decisions here be? And I agree that that could be one, but I think you go through that thought process. And if the conclusion that you come to is, okay, one of Grealish, Foden, or De Bruyne has to be benched, you look and find another solution. I think it's just at that point for Pep, that's off the table. If Kovacic has to start in that circumstance, and then you have to bench one of those three aforementioned guys, that's just not a plan that you go with. You just find a different plan that gives you, you know, at least a strong portion of whatever it is you're trying to achieve with that in terms of providing the support on that right side.
All right, I think that's the perfect place for us to leave it with a lot of question marks up in the air. I've got the buzz. I have been very vocal on this podcast this year saying I've felt apathetic at times and I've needed some big games and I've needed something to kind of jolt the system a little bit with City. And I think this game will just be that. When the TIFO comes down from behind the goal at the Bernabeu and the Champions League music plays, I, as somebody who has absolutely loathed this competition in the past, I might just feel a little bit of a tingle. So I think that's the perfect place we're going to leave it. Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm up for this. I can't wait for us to go in there as the villains and hopefully ruin their day.
Absolutely. Ollie, hopefully you feel a tingle too. Maybe we're feeling the same tingle. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure.
They could call us the Tingle Twins.
Okay, Booker. Okay. I'm not sure there's anything that makes both you and I tingle at the same time, but have you got any poetic outro for us?
When City and Madrid mingle, I feel a tingle in my Pringle. Until next time, we'll see you tomorrow.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.